The reading this morning comes from Genesis chapter 24. Genesis chapter 24, entitled Isaac and Rebekah. Abraham was now old and well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. He said to the chief servant in his household, the one in charge of all that he had, "Put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I am living, but will go to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son Isaac." The servant asked him, "What if the woman is unwilling to come back with me to this land? Shall I then take your son back to the country you came from? Make sure that you do not take my son back there," Abraham said. "The Lord, the God of heaven, who brought me out of my father's household and my native land, and who spoke to me and promised me on oath, saying, 'To your offspring I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, so that you can go and can get a wife for my son from there. If the woman is unwilling to come back with you, then you will be released from this oath of mine. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of his master Abraham and swore an oath to him concerning this matter. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and left, taking with him all kinds of things from his master. He set out for Aram Naharaim and made his way to the town of Nahor. He made the camels kneel down near the well outside the town. It was toward evening, the time women go out to draw water. Then he prayed, "O Lord, God of my master Abraham, give me success today and show kindness to my master Abraham. See, I am standing beside this spring, and the daughters of the townspeople are coming out to draw water. May it be that when I say to a girl, 'Please let down your jar that I may have a drink,' and she says, 'Drink, and I'll water your camels too,' let her be the one you have chosen for your servant Isaac. By this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master." Before he had finished praying, Rebekah came out with her jar on her shoulder. She was the daughter of Bethuel, son of Milcah, who was the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor. The girl was very beautiful, a virgin. No man had ever lain with her. She went down to the spring, filled her jar, and came up again. The servant hurried to meet her and said, "Please give me a little water from your jar." "Drink, my lord," she said, and quickly lowered the jar to her hands and gave him a drink. After she had given him a drink, she said, "I'll draw water for your camels too until they have finished drinking." So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough, ran back to the well to draw more water, and drew enough for all the camels. Without saying a word, the man watched her closely to learn whether or not the Lord had made his journey successful. When the camels had finished drinking, the man took out a gold nose ring weighing a becker and 2 gold bracelets weighing 10 shekels. Then he asked, "Whose daughter are you? Please tell me, Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? She answered him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son that Milcah bore to Nahor. And she added, we have plenty of straw and fodder, as well as room for you to spend the night. Then the man bowed down and worshipped the Lord, saying, praise be to the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not abandoned his kindness and faithfulness to my master. As for me, the Lord has led me on the journey to the house of my master's relatives. The girl ran and told her mother's household about these things. Now Rebekah had a brother named Laban, and he hurried out to the man at the spring. As soon as he had seen the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's arm, and had heard Rebekah tell what the man had said to her, he went out to the man and found him standing by the camels near the spring. Come, you who are blessed by the Lord, he said. Why are you standing out here? I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So the man went to the house, and the camels were unloaded. Straw and fodder were brought for the camels, and water for him and his men to wash their feet. Then food was set before him. But he said, I will not eat until I have told you what I have to say. After which follows a repeat of a lot of what has just gone before, and we take up the story at verse 54. When they got up the next morning, he said, send me on my way to my master. But her brother and her mother replied, let the girl remain with us 10 days or so, then you may go. But he said to them, do not detain me, now that the Lord has granted success to my journey. Send me on my way, so I may go to my master. Then they said, let's call the girl and ask her about it. So they called Rebekah and asked her, will you go with this man? I will go, she said. So they sent their sister Rebekah on her way, along with her nurse and Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, our sister, may you increase to thousands upon thousands. May your offspring possess the gates of their enemies. Then Rebekah and her maids got ready and mounted their camels and went back with the man. So the servant took Rebekah and left. Now Isaac had come down from Beer Lahai Roar, for which he was living in the Negev. He went out to the field one evening to meditate, and as he looked up, he saw camels approaching. Rebekah also looked up and saw Isaac. She got down from her camel and asked the servant, who is this man in the field coming to meet us? He is my master, the servant answered. So she took her veil and covered herself. Then the servant told Isaac all he had done. Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, and he married Rebekah. So she became his wife, and he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death.
Thanks, Ralph. I'm sorry it's such a lengthy reading, but we couldn't miss any of that out, could we? No. I'm sure you're saying no. Now, marriage is often in the news today, isn't it? Usually, unfortunately, it's celebrities, or perhaps a royal or two. That's happened in the last couple of years, isn't it? Royalty has been splashed over the front pages of the newspapers, and most people's question is, I wonder if that'll last. Well, statistics are very depressing, aren't they? If you read the number of marriages that remain true and keep going strong. It is rather depressing reading. And marriages have taken on a slightly modern aspect these days. Apparently, I've heard that the vicar says now, at the end of a church service, when the bride and the groom have gone through the formal ceremony, he says, "I pronounce you man and wife. You may now change your Facebook status." I thought it was kiss the bride. But no, never mind. And we can read here and there various words of wisdom. One person has written, "Marriage is a bond between a person who never remembers anniversaries and another who never forgets them." Well, yes, that is a point. Someone said, "Adam and Eve had the ideal marriage. He didn't have to hear about all the men she could have married, and she didn't have to hear about the way his mother cooked." Well, I suppose that's a point of view as well, isn't it? Perhaps a little bit more helpful, someone has written, "A perfect marriage is just two imperfect people who refuse to give up on each other." That's probably more down to earth, isn't it? But, you know, when it comes to marriage, it's free choice in most places, but not in all cultures, of course. And in the Old Testament days, and still in Jesus' day, it was the parents who tended to make the choice. The couples would have an input, but it was the parentals who got together and decided who was an eligible person for their son or for their daughter. Now, as I suggested a bit earlier, in the case of Abraham, who's now well over 100 years of age, it's getting a bit urgent for Isaac because he's over 40 and he needs someone. And so he starts thinking about it seriously. What does he need? He needs a woman of integrity. He needs a woman who's appreciative of God's covenant. Just like, Sarah. Yeah, just like Sarah, really. That would be good. If he could get a carbon copy of Sarah, that would be... But unfortunately, he lived in what could be termed a lousy neighbourhood. He was surrounded by these Canaanite people, most of whom, well, none of whom actually, believed in his God, and were downright dangerous, quite honestly, and he couldn't have his son marrying into that community, apart from the fact that he needed to keep his distance, because when you get married, you know, you don't marry a person, do you? You marry a family. You may have noticed that. And he could not let his son marry into an idolatrous family, because where would his distinctiveness be then? And it would be sort of muddying the waters. So he needed to get someone from somewhere else. Now, who could help? Well, in this case, he turned to his right-hand man, a chap called Eliezer, his head servant. We read about him in chapter 15 of Genesis, and verse 2. He came from Damascus, and he was picked up, as it were, as a servant, on the way round, going round the long journey that Abraham made from Ur in the Chaldees, up here, and then round the Euphrates Valley, and then down to Canaan that side. And he'd become his head servant over the years, his chief of staff, his oldest servant, in charge of his household, financial consultant, head of operations, indeed his closest friend. And he'd been in charge of his family and his household for decades. So, in verse 3 and 4 of our passage today, if you want to turn to it in Genesis chapter 24, we find that he's given a plan of operation by his master. He has to go to Abraham's homeland, right back from where he came, 500 miles away, and to the north. I think we're talking about Haran, which is the halfway point, up there where he stayed quite a while, where some of his family was, and to find someone who had some things in common. That's what he wanted. Of course, Eliezer was a bit worried. "What if I can't find one?" he said. "What if I find one and she doesn't want to come here?" And he said, "Well, if that's the case, you're released from your oath. But fancy being given that job." Now, I want us to think about some pointers today. That's interesting. I pressed too hard. Perhaps I can take them away. Can I take them away? Does it work backwards? Oh, no. Oh! Oh, we... Can we get back to my first screen, please? That's not our point of the sermon. Oh, I'm sure that John will be able to find it by the time we get there. Anyway, I want us to think, draw from the passage some pointers for today. Not necessarily in any order of importance. But the first thing we can mention is godly advice. Who can actually help you making your decision? Oh, that's good. Thank you. Now, I'm going to try it again. I won't press too hard. Take notice of godly advice. This is the first thing. Now, whose advice would Isaac have? Well, he'd have his dad's, wouldn't he? His mum wasn't there any longer. But he would have his dad's advice and people in the family who had this relationship with God. Now, when Eliezer says, well, look, if I can't find anyone who'll come back with me, can I take Isaac up there to find out for himself? And it's interesting that Abraham says, no, I don't want you to take him out of Canaan, because that's where God had promised him his inheritance. So he didn't want Isaac to go back to where he came from and then, you know, start again there, because he was where God wanted him. So he didn't want him to be sort of tempted. So that was a bad idea. Isaac was part of God's covenant, and he needed God's continuing supernatural guidance, not in this case moving up the social scale, looking for more wealth and looking for more status, but just finding someone who was a suitable bride. So, parents aren't always right, are they? Well, only 99% of the time. But someone is more likely to make a good choice of a bride-to-be or a groom-to-be if they have some input from godly parents or godly relations or godly friends. Godly advice is something that people... Now, I don't know, I can't see if anyone in here is looking to get married soon. I can't see who's up in the balcony. But if there isn't anyone here who's thinking of getting married soon, thinking about your own children, how can you best advise them? You are someone who can advise your child, not in a pushy way, not saying, I've got Mrs. Wright up my sleeve for you, young man. But, you know, with helpful godly advice, that is really worth contributing. It's more objective, less subjective. And taking your counsel seriously is really good. So that's the first little tip we can get from here, taking godly advice. Eliezer doesn't waste time. He sets off with all these gifts. Now, we always think of camels as being the usual form of transport, don't we? You know, in desert scenes, there's always a camel here. But in fact, they were like luxury cars. They were like having a Porsche at home or a Maserati. So when he took 10 of Abraham's camels, it was like taking 10 stretch limousines filled to the gunnels with presents. You know, the top range stuff, Dior, you know, Estee Lauder, Boots, oh no, you know, that sort of thing. And it was quite a thing to do, this train of 10 camels. Did you notice on the cartoon, they actually had 10 camels? All the other ones I looked at, they had the wrong number. So that was biblical. So, 10 camels. And it was a month's journey to get where he was going. So it's quite a long haul with these 10 camels. And he ended up at Aram Naharaim. Now, that is Hebrew. Aram is the name of the place, and Naharaim means of the two rivers. Aram of the two rivers. And the two rivers, of course, are the Tigris and the Euphrates when they come together. So that's where he was going. That's where Nahor, who was Abraham's brother, lived. So, what did he do when he got there? He found a strategic place. Clever man. He wasn't chosen for no reason at all. He thought, now where can I see who's on offer, as it were? All the ladies, the eligible ladies. And he thought, I know. They all come and collect their water from the spring at the close of the day. If I sit near there, you know, sort of, they won't notice me with my 10 camels. And I'll be able to see what they're like. And then, what did he do next? He prayed. Did you notice that? He prayed. And now that's another thing. Cover the process in prayer. Any big decision needs to be covered in prayer. And that's what we need to do if we're looking for a husband or a wife, or your children are. We need to cover the whole situation in prayer. And that's exactly what Eliezer does. And he prays to God. And did you notice that before he finished praying, up comes this girl, Rebecca. I suppose, because he was a stranger, she wanted to find out. You know, she was concerned for him. Now, we don't have to take his form of approach, you know. He said to God, the person who comes and asks me if I want a drink is the one. You know, we don't need to take the same attitude. If a girl comes in tonight wearing a red top, that's the one. Or something like, if she comes in wearing flip-flops, I'm going to marry her. No, we've got other helps. We've got the Bible to help us with lots of teaching. And we've got the Holy Spirit to guide us. But, you know, he was looking forward to supernatural help, and he was on the way already. The angel had been sent before him to prepare his way. And what did he do? Not only did he pray, he looked for qualities. Now, he was looking for that special characteristic of uncommon hospitality. That's what he was looking out for. Now, every woman came to the well with her clay jar, held 5 gallons of water, quite heavy. And it's jolly hard work just carrying one of those to and fro. Now, this young lady came up to him, called Rebecca, and it turned out that she was Abraham's grandniece, or Isaac's first cousin once removed. And bonus, she was beautiful. Well, he might have expected that, but it wasn't, you know, part of the script, really. And the clothes she was wearing would indicate that she was unmarried. So he knew she was the right sort of person. And he added his request. You got a drink for me, dear? And she said, yes, and I'll do your camels too. Now think about that for a minute. 10 camels. Now each camel could drink 50 gallons per second, apparently. Her jar was 5 gallons. That would mean that she'd have to make at least 100 trips to and fro from the trough where the camels were to the spring and back. 100 trips. One trip, take a minute per trip, we're talking about 2 hours there. So she offered not only to give Eliezer a drink, but to do 2 hours of back-breaking work with this 5-gallon jar of water just to look after his camels. Wow. That was a bit special, don't you think? A rare gem. So, look beyond the superficial. Now, first views of someone might be a bit deceptive, don't you think, sometimes? Someone once said, to actually find out what someone's like, sit them down in front of a computer with slow internet. And before the half an hour's out, you'll know what they're like, what their character's like. Well, I can appreciate that. we need to look beyond the superficial. You know, the first view, the blind date. Do you remember Blind Date with Cilla Black? Oh, it's going back a bit, isn't it? But, you know, on the first impressions aren't always very, very accurate. But this lady was set apart from the ordinary. She was generous to strangers and considerate. And so Eliezer approached her, gave her this jewellery. Did you see what he gave her? He gave her 2 bracelets and a nose ring. Well, forget about the nose ring. It must have been quite unpleasant. I don't know what size it was. But certainly a lot of gold. It's a bit like, you know, going to a hotel and saying to the porter who is in the lift and carries your case, here you are, here's a Rolex watch, old chap. What? You know, God dear. And I think when she went home and told her family, and Laban, her brother, thought, wow, I think he might be a bit attracted by the gold. I'll just crackle quietly. Anyway, he establishes her credentials, and it turns out that she's a hospitable person, and so is her family, because she doesn't need to go home and find out whether they can have them for the night. She knows already. She said, oh, we've got plenty of straw for your camels, and we've got room for you to stay. Yep. What a lovely family. So she was outwardly beautiful, but also inwardly beautiful. He was able to find that out. She's unselfish, thoughtful, courteous, diligent. What a discovery. But he'd taken time, hadn't he? He didn't just decide that in a split second. And that's one thing we sometimes forget. Take time and think deeply. Now, I'm not really in for these marriages that take place in 30 seconds. You know, oh, seen her for the first time. Yeah, she's the one. Get married. You need to think about these things. These life decisions need to be thought about deeply and take time over them. How will the person react in different situations to misfortune or illness? Well, Eliezer had keen insight. He watched closely. He asked sensitive questions. He took time to observe interaction and saw something about her relationships. And when she ran home, Eliezer thanked God, because he knew that Isaac was going to be marrying not only Rebecca, but a family that cared. But perhaps the most important thing, look for mutual spiritual interest. This was the most important thing. Did the family share any of the values that Abraham had? Did Rebecca believe in God? Did it affect her behavior in any way? For a perfect marriage, for imperfect people, that common interest in God is absolutely crucial. So, he went home to the family. And did you notice where Ralph cut off the first half of the chapter? They were just about to have their food. They served the food. And Eliezer said, stop! I'm not going to eat any of this food because I want to spill the beans. Why I've come. So he did. He recounted what had happened just to see how they responded. And how did they respond? Well, they responded with their final question. Can your daughter marry Isaac? Yes, we can see God's hand in this, they said. So yes, they did. They shared those spiritual values. The family's knowledge of God, of the same God, was revealed. So all seemed to check out. Abraham's family clan member, uncommon character, worship the same God. Tick, tick, tick. Ah, one small question. We haven't actually involved Rebecca in the decision making yet, have we? Would she be ready to leave her mum and dad and go 500 miles back on these camels to someone she's never met before? Let's see. You see, Eliezer insisted on an immediate return. No, I'm not going to wait 10 days, he said. No, I need to go back now. My mission has been successful. If she'll go. Oh, they said, we'll call her and ask her. That was quite decent of them, wasn't it, really? Right, Rebecca, we want you to marry this man who you've never met before. Are you going to have to travel 500 miles there? All we can say is that we think that God's hand's in it. What do you reckon? I'll go, she said. Now, I don't think it was the attraction of the gold. I'm sure it wouldn't be. But, you know, it was an adventure, to put it mildly, wasn't it? She had to go, and so they did. They went off straight away. She took a few of her handmaids. Well, there were 10 camels. They got no gifts any longer, had they? Because they'd all been palmed off to the family. So they had 10 separate camels, so she could have one for herself, and she could take 9 handmaids if she wanted to with her. I don't suppose she did. But she certainly took her old nanny, who brought her up. She went, and some other maidservants. So off they went, and a month's worth of journey back to where Isaac was. It's a bit like Sarah leaving Ur, wasn't it? You know, she didn't know what she was going to leave for, a nomadic life, a life of faith. Anyway, they got near to where they should end up, and guess who was out in the field, wandering to and fro? T'was Isaac. And the Hebrew word, which in my version is translated meditating, he was meditating in a field, it actually means was wandering up and down, you know, like this. You know, he's full of anticipation and expectation. Who am I going to get? Is there going to be anyone? Oh, I can't wait. Oh, and then these camels come over the horizon. And of course, in those days, a lady who was going to be married was not to be seen facially. from the time that they were engaged, betrothed. So she slips off her camel, says, "Who's that in the field?" Isaac, "Oh, quick, where's my veil?" On. And she was ready. So she was ready. And we get one little verse at the end of the chapter, which basically is compressed. We presume there would probably have been some toings and froings and some getting to knowings and also a lavish feast, because I can't believe that there wouldn't have been a wedding feast with Abraham and his wealth. It would have been a huge affair. We don't read anything about that in this chapter, but it would have taken place. But it is lovely that Isaac brings Rebekah into his mother Sarah's tent. Sarah's tent would have been a big tent, hadn't been used since she died. It would have been very ornate, very spacious. And so the fact that he took her into his mother's tent indicated to everyone that this was the new mistress of the household, the number one lady. And also, it doesn't stop there, it says, he loved her deeply. And she was a special comfort to him after the death of his mum. Ah, you know, men are like that a bit, you know, they need a bit of comfort from time to time. And Rebecca was just the right person for it. So, there we are. How to choose your wife or your husband-to-be, or to help your offspring in that. What have we got? Take notice of godly advice. Cover the process in prayer. Look beyond the superficial. Take time, think deeply, look for mutual spiritual interest. Those are five crucial things in making a life decision. So let's pray that God will help us when the time comes, if we have to be involved in things like that. And let's thank God also for some of those that we may have taken part in when we married our partners, those of us who have.